This is Ryan Dawson on ANC Report. Today, my guest is Mr. Doug Valentine. He is an expert on the DEA and CIA. He's a poet and an author of The Strength of the Pack, The Personalities, Politics, and Espionage and Intrigues That Shape the DEA. And also the prequel to that book, The Strength of the Wolf, The Secret History of America's War on Drugs. Also, The Phoenix Program and two novels. And we're going to talk today about the CIA's role in the so-called war on drugs, but we really don't have to limit it to just that because it overlaps into many nefarious things. Mr. Valentine, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
I want to talk about the CIA with you. I'm excited to do that. The propaganda is that Americans are the victims of foreign drug pushers, and the CIA and DEA are just there to break up cartels and capture drug dealers and stop illegal drugs. The counter-argument is that they are more in the business of managing the flow of drugs, the proceeds of which prop up other nefarious things, and that they only selectively bust drug dealers to justify their budgets and help monopolize the flow. Would that be a fair assessment of the CIA's actual role in the drug business?
Based on the extensive research that I've done, absolutely yes. They're in the business of managing the international drug traffic. They're not in the business of trying to eliminate it. They couldn't eliminate it even if they wanted to. And so, given the reality, what they try to do is manipulate it. Just in the same way that they try to manipulate public opinion, and in the same way that nobody disputes the fact that they try to manipulate public opinion, if you apply the same logic, then you would also not deny that they try to manipulate the drug trade. But part of the way of framing the whole thing is through propaganda. Psychological warfare is the biggest part of it, and if they can get people to believe things, then they can create a false reality.
Well, I would even argue that they might be managing the war on terror, because they seem to aid terrorists one day, fight them the next day. For example, in Syria, they're backing Al-Qaeda and al-Nusra, who supposedly we're at war with.
Well, absolutely. And a year ago, I went to I live in Longmeadow, Massachusetts, and I went, there's a rather large city next to Springfield, Massachusetts, has about 300,000 people. And I went down there to the FBI office, and I walked in to the FBI office and asked if I could speak to somebody, and they sent a guy out. And I asked them three questions. I said, how do you define terrorism? Two other questions, and then I showed them that newspaper reports that the CIA, according to their definition of terrorism, was involved in terrorism in Syria. And I said, these are American citizens. How come you, as the FBI, aren't out there obeying the law and arresting these CIA agents? And the FBI guy was kind of flustered, and he said, well, I'll have to pass that information and those questions to the people in Boston. And the people in Boston said, well, we got to pass that to the people in Washington, D.C. And after a bunch of back and forth, the woman who's in charge of public relations for the FBI, after I kept backing him into a corner, sent me an email. And in the email, she said, we have no authority over the CIA.
Well, they back the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. They back
him. Oh, yeah. The point being that they're not denying that the CIA is involved in terrorism. The FBI is perfectly aware that the CIA is involved in terrorism. And their explanation is that they have no authority over the CIA. So nobody in the government is denying that the CIA is involved in terrorism. It's a fact. And they do it all the time. And they do it everywhere around the world. The only people who are fooled are the American people. And if everybody in the United States walked to their local FBI station and asked them, why aren't you arresting CIA officers for engaging in terrorism, maybe the laws would change. But the laws don't change because basically American citizens, most American citizens are quite glad and happy that the CIA is involved in terrorism. They're glad that the American has 1,000 military bases around the world and dominates the world and makes their lives easier. So the problem isn't with the CIA, and it's not with the U.S. government. It's with the fact that most American people are quite happy with the fact that the U.S. government and the CIA have beaten everybody up in the world and doing things that are quite illegal to their benefit.
Well, Hollywood
so
props
it's
up.
It's really a mistake to even blame these people. For it's the fault lies with the American people.
Yeah, it's with both. And Hollywood and TV has a gazillion CIA and cop and lawyer shows where
absolutely.
It's glorified.
I mean, and everybody cheers them when they, you know, they Marky Wahlberg or Sly Stallone or whoever their heroes are going out there and they're torturing people and they're assassinating people and they're blowing people up and they're doing it to protect the American people from terrorism and to make sure that they preserve our way of life. And there's 100 million suburbanites around America who are very happy that this is happening. And that's the problem. The CIA is just a projection of the dark side, of the American psyche, which since its inception has been hell-bent on conquering the world. I mean, it's the people who formed the United States in the 18th century envisioned conquering Canada, Mexico, and all South America. They call it manifest destiny. And that America's destiny was to dominate the world and to bring, and at the time they called it the Enlightenment, which was Rousseau and John Locke and all these people who were rational, and they were going to bring this kind of scientific democracy to everybody in the world. Of course, they all knew that. I mean, you're talking about guys who were slave owners and committed genocide of the American natives and anybody who was inferior, Jews and Catholics. I mean, the whole schmear. And nothing's changed. And if you look at American history, you read somebody like Gore Vidal, who tells it like it is. It's perfectly apparent that nothing's changed, and America's on the same course that it's always been on. And that it does its best to hide its dirty deeds under this squeaky clean Boy Scout image of helping the poor and helping the people around the world, you know, the responsibility to protect and all this stuff. And it's just a joke. But
the humanitarian pretext for war, and our greatest ally is Israel, which has manifest destiny too over the Palestinians.
Yeah. And they have an even better one. Because the guys that framed America were basically atheists, and they didn't make any, I mean, Abraham Lincoln never went to a church in his life. People were worried about him, you know. Most of these guys never stepped foot in the church, but with Israel, they based their whole manifest destiny on the absurd notion that 3,500 years ago, the God of the universe, who had up until that time stayed in the background, all of a sudden spoke to a guy named Abraham out in the desert and said, I'm revealing myself to you as the God of the universe, and now you know it, and all your descendants know it, and you're all special people, and I give you this little part of the Middle East for recognizing my existence. And to this day, they're perpetrating this myth, and actually, there's 100,000 people in America who believe it, and they're evangelicals, and they actually believe that this desert God, you know, revealed himself to Abraham and gave him Israel, and they say when you ask them, how can they oppress the Palestinians and turn them into a slave state? They say, well, because God gave them Israel, man. Yeah. I mean.
Well, God, this God is both a racist and a real estate agent.
If people can believe this kind of, you know, sixth grade, third grade, Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy kind of fable, Of course, they're going to believe that the CIA is protecting them from terrorism. That people believe all sorts of crazy things, really bizarre, and the whole foundations of our society.
Well, I
The
think.
assumptions that we have about the universe and what it means to be rational are the problem, not really the CIA. You know what I mean? That we would be doing what the CIA does anyway, because
Yeah.
that's human nature.
There was plenty of genocide and killing before the CIA existed on, and I think what happens there is that it doesn't really matter how thin the pretext is, even if it's a humanitarian war like in Libya or some farcical thing like that, or some religious propaganda. It doesn't matter how asinine the pretext are, as long as it promotes what they want to do anyway, which is steal a bunch of resources and land and be the.
That sums it up. And also, they want cheap labor. You
Well,
have to
obviously.
realize that
Well, I was
the
considering
one thing
labor
that you need to
resource.
realize about the CIA is that it's not a democratic social service agency. It doesn't have it as its goal promoting the interest of the average American citizen, of the working class, of the middle class. It has as its goal and its mission supporting the interests of the 1% of the 1% that control America. And just like the religions that we're talking about, with their crazy rules and theories about the origins of the world and the human mind, they exist also for control, the control of the people who control these resources, the people who control the military. And if average people feel that they're getting, relatively speaking, a better deal, then they'll support their rulers. And that's the trick for the 1% of the 1% that the CIA is serving. If they can make people think that they're getting a pretty good deal based on what everybody else is getting, then they'll continue to support them. But it's really just psychological warfare and mind games. And they have been spending probably 50% of the drug money they make on research for how to control people and make them think that they're getting a good deal. And
Well, they have a department
they
for
really
it.
pour a lot of resources into how to manipulate people, and they do a really good job at it.
There's a psych war department that used had teamed up with C.D. Jackson and Billy Wilder from Hollywood at, hand in hand since the CIA's inception. They have an actual department just to study not only war propaganda and post-war propaganda, but psychological control over the public. And they've had several programs to control dissident groups. There is Operation Mockingbird and COINTELPRO and so on. But to bring this back to the drugs, back to drugs, the CIA has used and sold drugs, I guess, since the opium wars in China, up through MK Ultra, to heroin in Afghanistan today, narcotics from Mexico and so on. They got busted flying planes full of cocaine during Iran-Contra. It's an open secret, but the game persists. But let's talk about the origin there. Could you talk a bit about China and the opium trade? If I'm correct in that, I would say that was the beginning with the CIA at least.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad that you're asking me to start there, because you can't really understand the CIA or what's happening now without a historical perspective. And again, when we go back to the two opium wars, which are in the middle of the 19th century, 150 years ago, the whole issue was over imperialism and free trade. The British were taking opium from India, and they were selling it in China. They actually hired gangsters, the Brits, to create opium dens and drum up, just like Coca-Cola and Pepsi do, customers for their product. It's no different. And they got hundreds of thousands of people addicted in China with Indian opium and which they traded for tea, and other spices that they had access to in China. So the merchants were making a lot of money, and they were also expanding their military empire through the money would go back to create bigger and better ships and a more powerful war machine that could more easily control the seas and prevent China from advancing as a society. So it was all very nefarious, no different than the slave trade. And when the Chinese objected, the Brits waged war on them and basically destroyed their elites and replaced them with elites that served the British interests, which is very easily done. You don't have to. They learned very easily that you don't have to control the people of a foreign country. You just have to control their leadership, and that's how the Brits and the French and everybody went about colonizing the world. When we talk about in America the crimes of Hitler and Stalin and Pol Pot, we very conveniently leave out centuries of colonization and imperialism and slavery and all these things which caused far more misery around the world. So the psychological operations have been in existence since time began. And the only thing that the CIA has done, especially in terms of the drug war, is to perfect the methods of controlling how people think about it. So after the Opium Wars, at the end of the 19th century and the early 20th century, the United States established its first colony in the Philippines as part of the Spanish-American War, as part of Manifest Destiny. And it was in the Philippines. And
That was the original Pacific pivot.
in the Philippines in the early 20th century, Americans from the imperial establishment, as opposed to the nativist establishment, saw the Philippines as a naval base to use to project American military and economic interests around Asia. And they found lots of opium addicts in the Philippines and in the Far East. And as part of like a sort of Jesuit, the first humanitarian aid program as cover for imperial operations, they decided to outlaw opium. And this worked because it helped the United States in leverage against the Brits and the French, who were big colonial powers at the time and were making lots of money off of opium. So it served America's imperial interests to make opium illegal because that would rob the Brits and the French of a huge source of influence and money in the Far East and around the world. And they did this under the aegis of morality, that smoking opium was bad for people and it was a public health problem. And so laws were passed in the United States in 1914, the Harrison Narcotic Act, which made opiates and their derivatives subject to government control. The pharmaceutical industries also wanted control because poor people for centuries were using opium as a home remedy to cure menstrual pains, headaches, just a million things.
That
And
stuff's bad for
if
you. Come sit in a
they could
cage.
get opium on the open market without any government regulation, then these pharmaceutical companies were losing out about 50% of their profits.
Wow.
So for a lot of economic and political reasons, which had nothing to do with public health, it had to do with the profits for pharmaceutical industries here in the United States and for projecting American power overseas, controls were imposed on narcotic drugs. And that's how the war on drugs starts. And the only victims in this are poor people who now have to go to pharmacies and pay 10 times what they were paying for opium or anything else. And slowly the United States, through the League of Nations first, in the 1920s and 30s try to affect controls on all the other countries in the world. And on other, you know, again, we have going back to this idea of an enlightenment. America was leading the way to make sure that the other countries in the world served the interests of humanity by banning and controlling opiums, opiates and cocaine, and then started in 1936 marijuana, which is really like the ultimate
and even alcohol
shell game trick. They call marijuana a class one narcotic, and they equate it with cocaine and heroin. And the possession and the sale of marijuana becomes the penalties are as great almost as they are for heroin and cocaine, and well, this increases the
propaganda there. Sorry, the propaganda there is coming from the CIA as well. Guys like James Jesus Angleton saying, "Oh, marijuana makes white women crazy for black guys," and.
Yeah, and Harry Anslinger was the big one. Harry J. Anslinger was the commissioner of narcotics, and in the 1930s, and he's the one who actually championed this. And what it does is it increases the police powers of the central government, and it increases police powers for state and local governments across the United States, and they're able to start incarcerating more blacks and Mexicans. If you're white middle class and you get busted for marijuana, you have a lawyer and your family gets you a suspended sentence. But if you're black, you go to jail. So it becomes a very good internally within the United States, very good method of population control, and the elites love it and they go for it and they blanket themselves in morality with it. We're preventing white women from cohabitating with black men and children from, if children smoke marijuana, then the next thing you know, they're going to be robbing stores and shooting heroin. So they cloak themselves with this false morality, but it's really a lie. And what they want to do is control disenfranchised minorities. And after World War II, there starts to become a lot of tension, because people realize that America has to move from a segregated society, which it is. Baseball, professional baseball, starts allowing blacks into the ranks of the, you know, the American and national baseball leagues, and blacks start campaigning for civil rights, and the whole nature of our society starts changing. At this time, the CIA is also created, and right after World War II. And as transportation starts making the world a smaller place, and, you know, in the 30s, the only way you could get across the oceans was by ocean liner. Now, planes are starting to make international transportation a lot easier. The CIA creates its own air force. It starts propping up governments around the world in its fight against communism, and one of them is China, nationalist China. And we get back to the opium wars and everything was happening previously. Through the 1930s, the United States, before there was a CIA, supported Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist Chinese. And this is an example of what was happening. It's representative of what was happening around the world. All around the world, the United States was supporting pro-free trade, anti-labor governments, like Chiang Kai-shek in China. And the way they supported Chiang Kai-shek in China was to allow him to control the opium monopoly in China. So Chiang Kai-shek and his nationalist government made huge amounts of money by controlling opium in China. At the same time, the United States government was on a world campaign for health reasons and the good of people to ban opium. So there was always this tension in the United States between its stated policies and its unstated policies. And it realized after World War II, if it was going to be able to continue to operate in a world that was smaller with a microscope on everything that was happening. It had to create a clandestine service that could operate in the underworld, actually where criminals, where bank robbers and safe crackers and forgers, a whole secret part of the government could operate in the underworld and could control the drug trade so that it can continue to support governments which were pro-free trade and anti-labor around the world through narcotic trafficking. And that was one of the prime functions of the CIA. They created an Air Force, Air America, which helped after the nationalist Chinese were kicked out of China to Taiwan, to help them transport narcotics out of the Golden Triangle to support their operations. And this happens all around the world from its very beginning. Because of the nature of the modern world with now communications that make people in Japan aware of what's happening in America instantaneously, you need a completely clandestine service in the government that works illegally, but it's also protected by the government, and you won't expose its operations. And that's what the CIA does. It is the arm of the United States government that does everything illegal, including drug trafficking, that the United States needs to have done in order to maintain control in the realities of the world. At the same time, keeping it secret enables the United States government to effect its psychological war on the American people, that everything that's being done is being done for their good, when in fact it isn't. And yet, day after day after day, this system works and it proves effective, and it simply reconfirms all the myths that Americans believe, because it does happen off the books. That's a very, very short summary, but it's happening in Latin America, it's happening in Africa, it's happening in Europe, it happens everywhere around the world. And systems, I mean, and if you read my book, I just explain how the systems work. Systems have been developed within first the Bureau of Narcotics, then the DEA, so that they can work with the State Department and the military and the CIA to maintain their control of the drug trafficking worldwide.
Well,
while at the same time, through the presentation of the DEA as the stated goals of the administration and the government and the American people as fighting narcotics, and with the DEA then covering for what the State Department and the military and the CIA do underhandedly within the underground to actually facilitate the trade in narcotics that benefits the political people that they want to prop up in particular countries. So the DEA serves as a cover organization for the CIA and the State Department and their operations around the world. And that's the only way to understand the DEA. It's based on lies. It's infused with lies, with double talk, Orwellian double talk. If you watch TV, there's a show called Weeds, you know, with a suburban woman dealing pot to people all around the, you know, having a good time, and there's corrupt DEA agents. And if you listen to music, there's references to drugs and pot and all these things all the time. The United States is loaded with marijuana. It's loaded with heroin. It's loaded with cocaine. It always has been. People are happy that these drugs are available to them. So within the United States, people suppress. they suppress their automatically their fondness for these drugs, because they also want to believe that they're this good people that the propaganda tells them that they are. And so it's the American society itself, its culture itself, which is full of all these contradictions, which create neurotic Americans walking around not knowing exactly what it is that they believe, and constantly trying to break through, as they did recently in Colorado, where now you can start buying marijuana for recreational purposes. But at the same time, the DEA hasn't stopped. The DEA is still out there hounding people, sending people to jail for 5 years for marijuana. And when they're in prison, they become hardcore criminals and they go back into the street, and it increases the government's control over people. So it's this really crazy, convoluted system, which is hard to sort out unless you really know how the systems work that are in place for controlling people, which are the things that I try to explain in my book, how the systems of control actually work through the bureaucracies.
Also, the black market profits from the drug trade allow them more plausible deniability for other nefarious things that they want to have a off the books budget for.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's recently been quite an expose about how the DEA formed relationships with a drug cartel in Mexico, in Sinaloa. And they actually, people from the State Department and the Justice Department and DEA agents went down there to Mexico and dealt with these guys for years. And because this one particular cartel was giving them information on other cartels. And they don't mention the CIA being involved because, I'll mention the CIA because the CIA doesn't, exist officially. And if you talk officially, you can't mention them. So, of course, they don't get mentioned. But, of course, the CIA is behind the whole thing. And the CIA's also, through the ATF, sending guns to the same cartel. So the same cartel can be armed. And so it can shoot up the other cartels. And in the meantime, Americans are complaining about all the murders in Mexico when it's the CIA that's selling the cartels the drugs, and the DEA and the Justice Department are working with them and pitting one against the other. And everybody says, well, okay, we won't talk about that. And they don't. And the reason they can't talk about it is because the object has nothing to do with drug control. The object is to destabilize Mexico, which is what the CIA and the United States are constantly doing around the world. They're creating criminal organizations, massive, that have as much power as governments in foreign countries. And it destabilizes these governments. And it keeps the people poor and willing to work for low wages, which serves Americans' imperial ambitions. They don't have to actually conquer these countries. They just subvert them to such a great and highly refined degree that these people have no choice but to do exactly what the IMF tells them to do. They're in debt because they can't, they've been destabilized. And then the bankers could come in and make them accept loans at very high interest rates that keep them in debt. And then once they're in debt, they can never pull themselves out again, and the bankers can tell them what to do. And of course, at the same time, the bankers are laundering the $300 billion a year that the CIA is generating in illicit narcotics activity, which doesn't have to be illicit at all. It could all be perfectly legal, just like marijuana is legal in the United States. It could all be really and truly a matter of public health and not a criminal matter. But if it was a matter of public health and it was a and not a criminal matter, then the CIA would be out of business because the government would have no need for a clandestine organization that manipulates and subverts foreign governments through underground criminal organizations.
Well, the
So,
IMF, for
they have
example.
to, in order to maintain the system, they have to maintain all these illusions. And you can only start to change the systems once you shatter the illusions.
The IMF is usually engaged in predatory lending to a despot that the CIA put in place to begin with.
That's exactly what I'm saying to you. And I'm not, what I'm saying to you is that it hasn't changed for 250 years. I mean, this is the way the United States has been doing business since it was organized in the 1770s and 80s. Nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is the technology and the systems. But the objects and the psychological warfare remain the same.
Well, I'd like to ask you about Philip Agee's book, Inside the Company, the CIA Diary. which he wrote in 1975, and immediately afterward we had the Church Committee. Do you think that was related to him, the whistleblowing on the CIA? Or I guess we should say what the Church Committee was. What was the Church Committee? What were they looking into?
Well, it was a Senate committee, one of several at the time, that was looking into the misdeeds of the CIA. And it has a lot less to do with AG than it has to do with the Vietnam War itself, which, of course, was more than a war in Vietnam. It also involved the war in Laos, and where the CIA had control of the Golden Triangle, which was where, at the time, 90% of the world's illicit opium was being produced, a huge amount. And the CIA controlled that business through its henchmen in Thailand and Laos and Burma, where in Burma there was actually the Kuomintang nationalist Chinese forces, which had actually been on CIA Air America planes taking opium out of the Golden Triangle for years. And a lot of opium was going to the generals and the politicians who were serving the CIA in the United States and Vietnam. And they were serving the United States and the CIA in Vietnam for what the reasons you just said. They were despots who were allowed to make huge amounts of money in the underworld through prostitution and narcotics and extortion of all manner under protection of the CIA. And that's why they betrayed their own countries. A few people who are put into control of the military and the organs of government and economy in a country sell out their own countries because they're able to make huge amounts of money, and that's what was happening in Vietnam. But as the Vietnam, you know, the communists surprised the world and they won, and they kicked America's ass in Vietnam. And now there was, by 1972-73, all the dirty secrets that had been generated and during the Vietnam War were starting to be exposed. All the things I'm telling you about. The fact that the number one being the fact that the CIA controlled the drug business in the Golden Triangle and sent that, allowed that, those drugs to go to not just its henchmen in South Vietnam, but to the mafia in the United States.
That's what I'm about to bring up.
Yeah, which had actually, guys like Santo Trafficante and just all the very famous mafiosi you know about were all.
Sam Diaconta and Lucky Luciano,
yeah,
and those
guys
were on the payroll.
Mafioso, major mafiosos in the United States were working for the CIA. And as long as they sold their heroin and drugs to the blacks, everything was fine. But all this is going to start to come out around 1972.
Well, Mary Lansky was working for Permdex with some of the CIA's own guys under Guy Bannister and the Kennedy affair and all of that.
Absolutely. All this stuff is starting to spill out. And so William Colby, who'd run the Phoenix program in Vietnam at that time, in 73 becomes the head of the CIA. And his business is to, through journalists like Seymour Hersh, who I refer to as CIA more, they're going to have what's called the limited hangout. They don't want the country to know about all this drug dealing that was going on in Laos. The fact that Vang Pao, who was in charge of their mercenary army there, was sending 14-year-old kids into battle so that he could make millions and millions of dollars dealing drugs. And the CIA, of course, huge fortunes off the drugs too, but they had to find a way to divert attention from all these nefarious underworld activities that they were involved in. And they had to do this through congressional committees, like the Church Committee and the Pike Committee, which would ostensibly reveal the sins of the CIA and make it sexy and sensational enough, just like we see what's going on with the NSA today, with Glenn Greenwald and
Jeremy Scahill.
Jeremy Scahill.
He
and
made
this
a
whole
movie about Jeremy Scahill.
They reveal that drones kill people. You
wow.
know,
amazing.
As if we didn't know. But when it comes to actually the systems that the CIA is employing and how these systems work with the DEA and Congress, we don't even begin to scratch the surface. And this is exactly what happened in the Church Committee and the Pike Committee and all these congressional committees that were going on at the time. And periodically, the CIA and the DEA and all these bureaucracies and organs of the United States government that are involved in criminal activities have to show a little leg. You know, because it's starting to become absolutely unbelievable. And so they reveal small little parts of what they do. And it's kind of sexy to Americans, given their proclivities and their predisposition to consider themselves good people and that they really don't have a dark side, and that the dark side really just exists with the CIA and all these things that the CIA and the DEA and the Justice Department, State Department, military are for our protection. We're going to give these guys a pass, and we're not going to look too deeply into this anyway, and so everything just remains the same. But it's all very carefully controlled, limited hangouts that hint at the existence of something evil going on for evil purposes, but never really, really gets into a rational, thorough discussion of how these systems work. And if you want a glimpse into how these systems really work, read my books. I mean, it's all there. It explains it.
I think another thing to say about that, when you look at places like The Nation or Leftist Hangouts or Democracy Now, where they flick a crumb off the tables, basically admitting stuff that anybody with two brain cells already ought to know, and avoiding the whole systems, but it gives them legitimacy with the left. Say, look, we said this bad thing the government was doing, drones kill people, or civilians were killed in Iraq, like, duh. But not getting at the entire system or really explaining anything at all.
Well, these bureaucracies like the DEA and the CIA are huge, and they have histories, and you can't understand them in a minute. And it's like trying to understand, become an architect, or to learn French, or any other kind of subject that you need to understand. It takes 4 years of undergraduate study, 2 years in a master's course, and then if you really, really, really want to get into it, you got to spend another 4 years in your PhD to get to understand these things, and people don't have the time. However, having said that, you know, Democracy Now! And The Nation, they've been around for a long time. And if they just had a column and they just built on that column a week at a time, you know, all the information would be there. And it isn't that hard to get all that information out there in one volume that explains how each of these systems works. But nobody does that. Nobody takes the time to analyze and explain the most important parts of the apparatus that keeps the power in place. And that's because, you know, the powers that be control
media.
The media, and they control academia. Mm-hmm. And academia is not open, you know, says, well, we can't talk about the CIA. There's no documents. I mean, nobody, you know, there's no documentation.
They didn't
there.
Write down like, all their crimes.
You can't. If you could show me some documentation that proves what you're saying, well, then we might, you know, at Columbia start a course on the CIA, or Harvard might start a course on the CIA and how it, you know, works with the DEA. But you know, we don't have no documents about this. You know,
well, there are some
documents. They won't give us any documents. You know, so forget it.
There are
and
a
it's
few.
It's just the biggest shell game. You know, God, who spoke to Abraham, could not have devised a more divine plan for fooling the people of the world. And yet it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. Every day it's the same crap. And at the same time, it would take about a year to clear it all up.
Yeah, one of those committees, the Kefauver Committee, concluded how the CIA was running drugs and working with La Cosa Nostra, and there were no consequences or anything. But I'd like to ask you about the domestic side of that, the prison industry, that which is usually private. If you could talk about the reason for the selective arrest within the United States and the prison complex.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that goes back to the founding of America and why it was founded, and what the goals and missions of the United States of America are. I'm reading right now Lincoln by Gore Vidal. And in 1961, Abraham Lincoln gets elected president. 1861. And did I say 1961? Yeah. Time flies. And he gets to Washington, and already 10 states have seceded from the Union. And Virginia hasn't seceded yet. It's planning to secede because there's an abolitionist movement afoot in the North that wants to abolish slavery. And slavery is how the South, the white people, the white elites, make a fortune, and they don't want to give it up. And they point to the fact that the Constitution of the United States says, there's actually a provision in the Constitution that says that slaves are the property of white people. Black people are the property of white people. And Abraham Lincoln has to make a decision. Does he go to war against the South, or does he try to preserve the Union? Or does he let the South secede? And a lot of people in the North are saying, well, let them go. We've got all the industry. We've got all the wealth up here. We can still conquer Canada and Mexico and South America. We don't need the Southerners to do that. Let them have their slaves, and we'll go it our own way. But Lincoln thinks the Constitution says we have to hold this country together. So I'm going to allow the South to have slavery if it holds the Union together. And that's what he says in 1961. You know, Abraham Lincoln is known for freeing the slaves. Well, in 1861, he was perfectly happy to let the South have slaves.
Well, Lincoln was a racist. He supported the Back to Africa movement as a congressman. They were all racist, and a lot of Southerners, that was definitely a reason for the Civil War, but the shots at Fort Sumter were to a tariff collection agency and had a lot to do with regional scapegoating and taxes and money. It wasn't just slave questions. Everybody was racist. The North had slaves too, by the way. Yeah. Kentucky had slaves. The Washington, D.C. had slaves. West Virginia, which would become later, had slaves. And Indiana had a rule where blacks weren't even allowed in the state at all. Period. Right. And they were killing Indians, so everybody was racist. That idea, like the North was the good guys and the South is bad, is just childish bullshit, basically.
Right. And the reason racism just fits, besides being its own thing, it's free labor. And Americans have built their fortune on free labor, the free labor of slaves. The labor in the North of child laborers in factories, of people working 70 hours a week. This is all this is happening before there's a labor movement and any kind of real enlightenment. And
the Irish.
It's still kind of an agrarian society, but you got to really learn the history to understand just how evil and how abusive and anti-humanitarian America's leadership has been and always has been. And if you understand that, if you understand what America truly is, not the myth of what America is, all of a sudden, it's not so hard to understand why 50% of all black guys are arrested by the time they're 18. I mean, it's a racist society, and they're trying to just like they're trying to destabilize, the powers are trying to destabilize Mexico and every other government around the country. They're trying to destabilize the people of the United States themselves in particular ways and to particular degrees. And blacks who are segregated against as official policy up to the end of World War II are one of the main targets. And it's the unstated policy of the United States to absolutely destroy and destabilize the black community of this country. And even if they have a
It's why
government
marijuana has the Spanish name.
that. Yeah, and Hispanics too. And everybody who isn't representative
The wasp
the white
walk.
middle class mainstream. And that is, once you start understanding how the government really works and how the systems are in place to do this, it really becomes easy to understand. But again, it's not so much a question of it's a question of getting rid of all your false assumptions about what America is first, then understanding how the systems are put in place to affect what the unstated policies are, and then all of a sudden it all makes sense. But if you believe the lies of the DEA, or the lies of National Football League or of Madison Avenue advertisers, then everything's very confusing. But it really takes a lot of research and study. Obviously, you're doing it, but that's what it takes it for everybody to do.
Well, people
And
have to read books, not just Google. You
absolutely.
have to read actual books that, yeah, I don't want to get in a rant about the lowest common denominator and sensationalism about stuff online and why it drizzles down to a certain level, but books are where it's at, and they're out there. There are a lot of great books, and it's enjoyable to read, even when you're reading about nasty things. Because when you get your head around it, you finally understand it, and rather than running around with a chicken with its head cut off, acting like this is inevitable, there's nothing we can do about it. You have to know about it first. And you really don't know about it if you're getting all your information online. There's a lot of great info online, but you gotta read.
Yeah, and there's all the information for understanding why blacks are oppressed in America is there. And to think that they're not, to watch Fox
Just the
News
poor.
and believe that blacks are not oppressed is very easily done. And for a certain kind of person, it's very satisfying to think that it's about time the blacks started giving back, for all the good stuff we've done for them. But the fact of the matter is, America has 5% of the world's population and 25% of its prison population. The prison industry in the United States is very profitable. It's like what the pharmaceutical industry was at the turn of the 20th century. And it's a way for elites to make money. And if you have targeted disenfranchised minorities that you can recycle in and out of this system, then they're serving their purpose in terms of providing, whereas they used to be free labor, now they're just providing profits for these for the prison industry as inmates, and they get taxed, which are and the money is recycled from middle class taxpayers who think again they're being protected from terrorism, when actually it's only relative to their illusions that they're protected from anything.
Well, drug crime too, if they're going to say marijuana is unhealthy, and like it is unhealthy to smoke anything, but putting somebody in a cage has got to be way worse for them than any number of joints they could smoke. And every time someone's put in a cage, everyone else has to pay for that, and someone else is making a profit, and it's
Sure,
utter
and if
nonsense.
you know, and if people have aren't alienated, if they're actually engaged in things that are beneficial to them, and that they can understand are beneficial to them, and they have a stake in what they're doing, then they won't spend all their time getting stoned. They'll enjoy the world for what it is. And this is just basic human psychology, but when your whole world is an illusion, getting high on dope and watching Ted, the Marky Wahlberg movie, getting high with his teddy bear, is like the height of your life and your day. And it's funny and it's cool, and that keeps you from any kind of active engagement in a social and cultural way that helps the people around you and the society around you. And so it's really like a
It's a
inverted kind of world that we live in.
self-sabotaging way to divert rebellion as well, to say, well, instead of taking a constructive approach toward the things that ail you, run away from it, but have fun. Push all those drugs on the anti-war hippies or whatever, so they're not going to really be effective.
Exactly. So it begins, and it's kind of a trope to say, or a cliche, but each person's got to wake up. And that's where it begins. You got to start acting rationally. Like you said, read some books. Practice every day for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes if you're not used to it. Not responding emotionally to events like 9/11 or the Olympics in Russia now, where every report coming out shows a bug in somebody's suit or a light out in somebody's room. I mean, the propaganda, anti-Russia propaganda,
It's like free
anti-Chinese
Tibet
propaganda.
in 2008. All of a sudden, people care about Tibet when the Olympics are in China.
Yeah, and you can respond to all these things emotionally, which is what the government wants you to do. And therefore, give to them you validate them. Or you can put your emotions aside, the way you feel about these things, and just start thinking about them and trying to understand them without projecting any of your emotions onto them. And it takes practice to do this, like learning to play the piano. And you have to start doing it for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes a day. Just stop believing all this stuff responding
Or just
emotionally.
turn off the TV. Or you have to ask yourself, why am I being told this story? Why are they all uniform, the same kind of stories, all in the same different out three-letter networks? There's an issue there. They can't all think the same stories are the news. Think about it, the news with the article the. It's amazing. Not some news, not
Yeah,
news,
and it's
the news.
I kind of what you're talking about, that phenomenon, is the Coke Pepsi phenomenon.
Yeah.
Do you like Pepsi better or do you like Coke better? Well, it's the same carbonated crap, and you can like McDonald's better than you like Burger King. You can like Russia better than you like China. You can like Glenn Greenwald better than you like Glenn Beck. But it's the same thing. It's no different. And if you're emotionally invested in what Glenn Greenwald said, or if you're emotionally invested in what Glenn Beck says, you're missing the point. And if you're being purely partisan with this stuff, you're missing the very basic rational explanations for what goes on. So, you got to divest yourself of all this kind of, if you, and I don't mean you individually, and use a bad word to use, but if people want to start, changing things, they have to stop their own, they have to challenge their own assumptions and stop being emotional about things.
Yeah, there's good parts of emotion and bad, and trying to reason things out usually isn't what it's for. But I'll run out of time here. I wish we could have talked about Operation Phoenix a little, and we could talk more about the CIA, I'm sure, for hours, but I'll just have you back on at another time. How's
Yeah,
that?
and we can dispense with all this overview, and I can tell you about the systems and how systems work.
Yeah, we can get into specifics. This was the general today, and we can all those things we said just about the mob, about we didn't even talk MK Ultra really, but or Vietnam, etc. All these are shows in and of themselves, all these topics. And of course, the biggest picture is the system. how it's actually working, how the CIA actually infiltrated the DEA in the 70s and so forth. And
I'm glad to do that, but you know, again, you can get sound bites or you can get information, so right. You know, it takes a while.
Well, I have to tease people to get the next, you know, podcast and show. I have to mention, I don't know how else other than a soundbite to sum it up, because I'm out of time, but we will tackle these things, I hope, in the future.
Okay.
And thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time, Mr. Valentine.